to the 106th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. Welcome. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. It's a gorgeous day here, sunny and 80, so I'm sorry for all you people sitting in the snow, but it is a great day to be in Florida. Last weekend, however, wasn't that great a day. I ran the Miami Marathon in the rain in 50 degrees. I know most people don't have much sympathy for anybody living in Florida that had to endure a 50-degree day on January, but it was cold. But I had a good race, so I'm really happy to report that. I've gradually been getting over a little bit of an Achilles injury, and I changed shoes, and things have been progressing, and so I have been running in paces between 9 and 10-minute miles on some of my runs. And I've been running a good bit of mileage, but I hadn't had any really long runs since my last marathon, so I wasn't sure what my endurance would be. So I thought I would, start out and see what a half marathon brought, and then perhaps do what they say is an adopt a run-walk strategy. Sometimes I run 8 minutes and walk 30 seconds, so I thought after 13 I'd make the decision on what to do. And actually, I felt pretty good. It was cold, but I didn't have any problems with my feet or my Achilles at all starting out, so no discomfort. So, a lot of marathoning is just how long you can tolerate discomfort. So the fact that I didn't start out with discomfort meant that I was going to be able to tolerate the discomfort that came along maybe a little bit better. So that's kind of how it went. So I got through 13 miles feeling really good. The thing that wasn't quite on my usual par is I usually try to eat a little something probably 3 or 4 hours before the race. And this race started theoretically at 6. I was in a back corral, so it was like 30 minutes to getting to the, it was 30 minutes getting to the start line once the race started for us. But nevertheless, I ate closer to when I start running than I like to, and sometimes I just kind of have a bit of the blahs, I think, as I metabolize what I eat. So I always like to have a little bit more time to kind of get through my system. So I was feeling a little bit on the, just a little bit on the sluggish side. I was still moving, and it wasn't like I had one of those episodes where I want to just lay down or anything, but I just wasn't really up as I would have liked to have been when I first started. But so I took a gel a little bit earlier. I usually wait till after an hour anyway, but about 10, 15 minutes earlier, I decided to take my first gel. And I really do think that helped because I got a little bit of a carbohydrate boost in. And I think the first gel I took had a little caffeine. So I got a little caffeine boost. And then I kept taking the gels about every 3 miles. And I tolerated them. Sometimes you just don't tolerate the gels. You get a little sick at your stomach or a little crampy, but I was able to tolerate the gels. I only drink water. I don't drink any sports drink. So, that made it really good. My heart rate was right where I wanted it. For me, I wasn't in that, I wasn't certainly anaerobic, but I was, in zone, high zone 3, zone 4, pretty good. And burning through more sugar than I usually burn through on a long run, but not excessively so. So dripping in that every 3 miles seemed to work for me. So when I got to the 13-mile mark, the half marathoners peel off, and so the course gets much less crowded. You're not zigzagging anymore, which I try not to do much anyway, but it just was impossible the first 10 miles or so not to have to zigzag once in a while. So the half marathoners pulled off, and the marathoners kept going, but there were still a lot of marathoners, so it didn't feel like you were just running alone. And so my plan was to run the next half marathon, the second half of the race, kind of like the mindset I would if I were doing an Ironman marathon. And typically those are out, you go out and back a couple times. So I thought, okay, well, let's take, out 6 and back 6, kind of that in my mind. So another 12 miles and see where we are, and then that last mile. So I thought when I got to mile 19, and I wasn't doing math well at all. And when I start to think about, I was thinking that, okay, we'll go out 6 and that puts me to 19 and then back 6, that doesn't finish you off. You have another mile to go. But I figured if I could just go out six and see how I felt, and then we'll go from there. And so at mile 19, I still felt pretty good, and I wasn't, I was still running. And I carry a water bottle with me, and I keep it about half full. So I stopped twice during that race to get water. And I usually run up to the table and just grab the pitcher or have the people pouring, just pour directly into my water bottle. I think it's kind of a nicer way than have all those paper cups all over the place. So I only had to slow down twice to get water. After mile 19, there was one time where I walked 30 seconds, just was having some cramping in my right hip. It rained, you know, on and off, mainly on, heavier times than not. It wasn't tremendously windy. The first part was, you know, somewhat windy, and I felt it more at my back than really into my face. So, you know, we're kind of used to running in Florida winds, so that didn't bother me too bad. It's the further we went, mile 19, from then on, it was just raining. You know, that part of the race, it just rained heavy for most of the rest of the race. And I just kind of kept on, and mainly because it's raining and there's, you know, walking, it's not going to make you any drier or any warmer. So I still felt good, and I'm still able to keep the pace up. And I was really happy about that mentally, because usually that 15 to 19 mile mark, I start to feel bad. And it's like, what the heck? But I kept watching my time splits and knew I had a chance at a pretty good time. So I wanted to, if I could just keep banking a little bit more time, I kept thinking, well, if the wheels fall off and I've just banked a little bit more time, then I'll still achieve my time goal. And so that's kind of what I did. And then about mile 22, you run out on this causeway, and it was raining so hard you could hardly see where you needed to turn around. But I saw a pace group, and I actually caught up with them. And I thought, well, you know, now I can actually finally maybe run with somebody a little bit. And I wasn't talking to them. I just was kind of running with them. And the guy carrying the pace sign he had really big feet, and he was making kind of loud clapping noises on the road and in the rain. And it was actually kind of comforting. It was almost like a drum cadence, and you know, like you've heard before, I've been running with a metronome. So it was kind of a metronome effect to me. So I just kind of focused in on that guy's feet flapping on the road and the rain coming up in the metronome, and I was running with them for those really ugly miles, you know, when you get out to that causeway and then turn around. And once you turn around, you're really just running back for the finish line. And I actually got ahead of him a little bit. I could still hear he's clopping in the background, but I got ahead of them a little bit and was able to keep going. And so I finished at a good time, 4:23, so that's good for me. And I was really happy. And boy, as soon as we stopped, it was just shivering. And, you know, it was just really, really cold. It's the first time that a race that my friends and I weren't able to find each other at the finish line. I think everybody was so cold. Everybody scattered. It was muddy and rainy, and nobody could see. And so we and eventually all met back at the hotel. I did run into my daughter. I look up and, you know, somebody's screaming mom. And when anybody screams mom, everybody looks right. That's a mom. And she was standing with an umbrella and this strange guy. And he was actually using her phone to try to get in touch with his family. So it was real confusing at first. But anyway, I got my sweatshirt and we kind of hobbled back, or I hobbled back to the hotel. She had already finished and showered from the half marathon. So it was a good day. One of the other highlights of this race was we actually visited Plant Food and Wine. It's Matthew Kenny's restaurant in Miami. I've had him on the podcast, and we had a wonderful raw meal the night before. And if you get the chance to visit one of his restaurants, I would strongly encourage you to do so. It was clean, wonderful raw food. It was beautiful to look at. And you know, I felt great afterwards, and I felt great the morning and the day of the race. So, you know, it's to me, it would be, I would eat raw every time before running a race. And a lot of people would find that crazy. They go, what are you going to do with the fiber? But, you know, it was just a lot of good energy food. And, you know, I'm used to eating a lot of fiber, so it didn't bother me at all. So next up for me is the Biltmore Asheville, North Carolina Marathon and half marathon. It'll be half marathon on Saturday, whole marathon on Sunday in the middle of March. So now I've got to bulk up the mileage again and throw some hills and weight training to try to get ready for that, and then ultimately the Mendocino Ultra Marathon. I would be remiss if I didn't speak a little bit about Women's or Heart Month. You know, February is American Heart Association Month. There's all kinds of walks and everything out there. I ran into a heart surgeon at the hospital this morning, and he announced to me that he had his red shirt and his heart tie on because it was Women's Heart Month. And I kind of giggled. I have a purple shirt that says, Jamie Delaney, MD, my heart beats on plants. And, you know, it really, to me, it shouldn't be a red heart month. It should be green month, because if every woman adopted a whole food plant-based diet, then we would cut heart disease away. And no one needs to have heart disease, not men, not women. And we're all just equally important, no matter what color you are or what gender you are. And if you eat a whole food plant-based diet, get rid of sugar, oil, and salt, you're going to be much healthier. So I just kind of smiled. You know, he's curing heart disease the way he knows how, is to bypass the problem. I had a somewhat disappointing meeting this week with the staff, the nutrition staff, and administration of the local hospital that I admit to. I was told that my inability to order a vegan diet for my patients was kind of all in my head, that it was very easy and that it was very available. And I disagreed with that, so they offered to meet with me and to address my concerns. And I brought with me a menu that every patient is given, which does not have anything labeled vegan or plant-based. There are some vegetarian options. And it is nearly impossible to order a la carte off of that menu. And I tried to explain my position to the staff that when a patient gets admitted to the hospital and they've been eating the standard American diet, which is heavy in salt, they oftentimes are on multiple blood pressure medicines. And even just getting to the hospital 2.5 gram sodium diet, their blood pressure drops, and that we often have to stop their blood pressure medications. So that if we could take it one step further with the plant-based diet, we would do even better. The staff's position was that people should be able to choose what they want to eat, even if it's plant-based, you know, more along a line of a vegan diet. And, you know, in jest, I said, you know, Oreos and Twizzlers are vegan, but I don't want my patients ordering that. And my point is that if a patient has not been educated to know that eating a standard American diet is responsible for the high blood pressure and the need for multiple medications, when they come to the hospital, they're certainly not going to know any better. And it's the job of the hospital and the nutrition staff and educators and doctors to educate that patient on nutrition to the point where they could eliminate their medication. So if a whole food plant-based diet would be introduced to them and presented to them in a way that it was tasty, then that would encourage them to change, and ultimately they would become more healthy. I also liken that to a patient coming in and requesting their own antibiotics as opposed to the antibiotics for pneumonia or something that might be chosen for them by the health care provider. Just because the patient may not be educated in what antibiotic if they're not a physician, and if they were educated to what was available, then, you know, they would understand why the physician made a certain choice. And to liken that to nutrition, because I feel that food is medicine, that it's the physician's job to educate the patient on how that food is medicine for them. What we ultimately came to a disagreement about, and it was more of a agree to disagree, was that the hospital provides a vegan menu, even though it's not given to a patient unless they ask for it. And there was a Xeroxed white sheet of paper that had one option for each meal every day of the week that was labeled vegan, and it was spelled V-E-G-E-N, and I quote. But it was more about providing food that the patient might like the taste of as opposed to being part of their therapy. Some of the options on this menu were homestyle potatoes, vegan sausage link, cream of wheat, a black bean burger that was purchased at a health food store, pasta with tomato sauce, vegan flatbread, an English muffin with peanut butter, toasted bagel with tofutti, cream cheese. Peanut butter was on there multiple times. There were cucumber slices, but there was never a giant salad or ability to get kale or, you know, on a regular basis. You could get tossed spinach salad and broccoli on one day for dinner. That would be the closest you could come to a nitric oxide producing green day. So certainly it wasn't a menu that I would consider along the line of a healthy plant-based diet. But, you know, apparently those options do exist. The problem is that you can't order them because if you go into the computer system, you know, it would take like 6 greens to get to a vegan diet, but you couldn't specify how much salt or sugar or oil you wanted the patient to get. So, you know, that there's no way to limit those. And there was no way to communicate between the order system and the dietary computer system. So there's a lot of work to do. They did recognize that the computer system is, you know, lacking in options. I'm pretty sure I didn't get my point across. Everybody got pretty defensive as far as what was being served. You know, their perspective, and I do appreciate it, is that, you know, they would go out of their way if somebody was vegan, and they would go to the health food store and try to get them something like a vegan muffin or an Amy's pizza. And they thought, you know, because they were actually making an effort, which they are, they to go out of the campus to get somebody food, that was beyond the call of duty, you know. And of course, I wanted a different call of duty. I wanted them to use the food that was right there that came in to make food. But so, you know, maybe there's still a dialogue. I'm not sure. But I, you know, will continue to try to have my patients not need the services of a hospital, at least when it comes to cardiac diseases. So that's my plan. So I would like to, you know, I really want to change my practice into offering more of this to be available for everybody. So to, you know, be a more of a lifestyle medicine practice where we sit down with specific goals and a time frame for people to get off their medications and reverse their lifestyle diseases. I think in reality, if this is new to people, that it takes 6 months, and some people may require more support than others. But, you know, my nutrition class is moving right along with the weekly classes. I think we need to add more of that to the patients that want to get off their medications, more education, more menu planning, an intensive look at their laboratories and goals, an intensive look at their exercise regimes and their mobility regimes, and really start to focus on getting people healthier quick so they can go on about their life. So, you know, I'll give you some, you know, again, show notes and references at the end of the podcast. But, you know, if you have any interest in this at all, it can be telemedicine. It doesn't, if you don't live in Florida or close by, we can certainly do this afar as well. And, you know, my website will have more information, drdelaney.com. And certainly you can email me at jamiedelaney@gmail.com. And that's jamiedulaney@gmail.com. Today I actually have the honor of having a guest. Justin Lacey is another beacon or lighthouse out there, like Josh LaJohnny. Justin has suffered with being overweight most of his life. He started reading diet books in the age of 12, trying to fix his problem by himself. His grandmother offered him money to lose weight, but of course, you know, didn't have any better idea than he did as far as how he might go about that. He's done numerous water fasts. He's lost hundreds of pounds over and over again, only to gain it back. And finally, stumbled upon a Facebook page of plant-based nutrition and started looking more at nutrition than weight loss, and has changed his life through focusing on eating a whole food plant-based diet to gain health and to eat clean and to eliminate processed foods and oils and now chemicals. And he's half the size he was. He started over at 500 pounds. So I'll let Justin tell his story. He's very, very humble. He has a tremendous amount of insight. He is a tremendous motivation for anybody. And, you know, happy that he took time to speak with me. So without further ado, here's Justin Lacey. I'd like to welcome Justin Lacey to the show today. Justin is a remarkable, and I'm going to say young individual compared to myself. He's lost hundreds of pounds on a plant-based diet, and it kind of started on a little bit of a Facebook whim, right? You just got on a site, and I mean, and that's when you first found out about plant-based nutrition. Is that how it went?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I found a group on Facebook, and a lady sent me a video of Dr. John McDougall, and after that, it was just nothing but plants.
So I noticed that, you know, you've been struggling with your weight since you were a child, and you have brothers and sisters, you know, and I also heard on another interview that you said, you know, you actually read diet books when you were 12.
Yeah, I was very hesitant my whole life, and, you know, when I guess puberty hit, you start really starting to feel more, you know, conscious about it, self-conscious, and I remember going to the library and trying to get, you know, books like Protein Power by Dr. Eads, or I remember purchasing, like, one of the low-carb diet books from Dr. Atkins when I was, just 12 or 13 years old.
And what would be the day in the life? I mean, did you notice a difference between your hunger drive and your brothers and sisters, or were you kind of too young to notice something like that?
I really wasn't really cognitive of it when I was younger, really. It was just I really liked food, and I guess the food that we had around was always, you know, the standard American diet type foods. And then you go to school and you have pizzas and burgers, and you have an extra 50 cents or a dollar. So, you know, I would say my appetite was probably more, increased than the other kids, I think. I mean, obviously, because it made me a lot more overweight than them.
And you weren't into sports as much as other brothers and sisters?
No, not really at all. I mean, when I was younger, I played a little bit of, you know, soccer and a little bit of like baseball, but it was just like elementary stuff for a short period of time. But I didn't even enjoy it because I was always so out of shape, always out of breath. But yeah, my brothers would be playing all sorts of sports. You know, they played football. My older brother played some basketball when he was younger, and they always seemed to be a lot more active than I did.
And things just kept ballooning up. And did your parents hound you at all? I mean, did they try to, you know, kind of channel, you know, try to get things under control, or suggest that they know you were reading the diet books?
Yeah, they actually didn't really know that. I really didn't tell anybody that. You know, for me, it was just like a private problem that I felt that I was trying to take care of, because I didn't like being overweight. You know, kids can be teasing and all that, and it wasn't a horrible thing in my past, and I wasn't teased an awful lot or anything, but my family members would let me know. My mom, my dad, my other family members, my grandparents always knew that I needed to do something about the excess weight, so they always try to have incentives. I remember my grandma years ago said she would give me $5 for every pound I lost, and I don't remember how old I was. I must have been, you know, anywhere from ages 10 to 15, I don't remember, but it was always something, you know, always trying to not eat as much, or always try to do something. It's always been a lifelong thing of trying to get the weight off.
And, you know, back then, did, you know, they suggested, you know, we'll give you money, but nobody really told you how, other than just curb your appetite and portion control.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if I found that stuff out earlier, my whole life, I think, would have been a completely different thing.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we were talking earlier, you know, I grew up in West Virginia, and I had a grandma that was a very, very good cook, and she showed her love by making food. And there was one incident where I broke my leg, and my parents were actually on vacation. And I remember this like it was yesterday when I came home with the cast, came back to my grandmother's house with the cast on, and she had prepared all my favorite foods. You know, so here I am in a cast, can't move, and you know, all this food. And then my other grandmother came to visit, and what did she bring? This sack of candy. So it was, she had a bar that had, you know, that they sold candy and stuff like that as well. And so she had a big sack of candy, and the other one, you know, was this big Irish cooking, you know, this big food, you know, potatoes and, you know, of course, green beans with ham in it and all this other kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, the culture of the day was that, you know, you kind of show your love with food. And then, you know, in your sense, and it's like on the opposite there, it's like, yeah, but don't eat as much. Don't eat that much, right? So it was like do it, but don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's almost everywhere you go. Everyone just loves food. I mean, you can't deny that everyone is just a food fanatic no matter what it is. And I think another thing for me is when I was younger, I got into food making. Like, I was watching Food Network. Like other kids were watching cartoons and stuff. I was watching Food Network trying to learn how to make, you know, fancy dishes. So I think that might have been a contributing factor too.
Were you praised because of your great cooking skills? I mean, if people say, you know, Justin, oh my gosh, Justin makes this or Justin makes that.
Yeah, I think maybe I was, just because I was always trying to do something different. I remember when I was, you know, really young, watching some cooking show and learned how to make some basic sugar cookies, and I made them, and you know, they were just so good. I try to have everyone try them. So I think, yeah, throughout my childhood and my younger days, I was always trying to be that person who was trying to comfort my family through food as well. And, it just was part of my life for so long, that factor, the trying to please people with food.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how things can snowball. And then, so, you know, you've tried all these things, and like you say, you know, you do it for a while and you can tolerate it for a while. And you lost 100 pounds three times?
Oh, multiple times, yeah. And it was always the same way. It was always the same exact repetition type thing. You know, go on a low-carb diet, lose a little bit, couldn't sustain it, I think, and started just gorging on the regular stuff that I used to, and gained it all back plus some, and it would just keep on getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and luckily I found something different.
I have patients that will come in and they'll be really overweight, and they'll tell me that they really don't eat very much. And hardly eat anything. And of course the recollection for the, you know, and I know they'll actually be, and I know that they will try to skip meals or only eat one meal a day. And so, you know, they're trying so hard to rein themselves in. Did you feel like, you know, a lot of times you weren't eating anything and still it wasn't helping? You know, were there, Josh LaJohnny called it ghost portions. Did you have ghost portions?
I think I tried almost everything out there as far as, you know, ways of losing weight. And yeah, I would definitely be trying stuff like, okay, let's only eat half of everything that I normally eat, see if that works. Or try to eat only 1,000 calories a day and see how that works. Or I got into fasting for a long time, where I wouldn't eat anything for days, you know, and thinking maybe this is going to strengthen my willpower, you know, because it was always about willpower. Everyone thinks that that's the secret key. And after many, many years of mastering these diets, you realize that willpower has nothing to do with any of it. Really, it don't. But yeah, I was definitely a person who would try anything out there, including portion control and, yeah, possibly ghost portions, yeah.
When you were doing the various, you know, diet or restriction, were you ever on a super healthy diet that, you know, close to a plant-based, or was it always more of the high-fat stuff?
Well, I tried eating more vegetables. I really, I mean, throughout my whole adult life, I tried to understand weight loss as, I think, out of necessity. I tried to understand why and how the body uses fat and, you know, how to get rid of fat. I tried to figure out the science of it throughout my whole adult life. So I knew about certain things, but I never really did grasp the overall health aspect of it. Like, I just cared about getting the weight off my whole life. I really didn't care about health. I didn't care if I had to starve myself. I didn't care if I had to eat, you know, steaks with lettuce, whatever it took. I really never had health as the focal point of my entire thing. So, but when that switched, when I finally switched from health versus weight loss, that's when it actually started to work.
And tell me, like, so right when you so the Facebook group, you found out what this plant-based thing was. So tell me, like, your initial, okay, so I'm going to try this. What did you initially do? Like, what were some of those first meals that you tried?
Well, I watched a whole bunch of videos. I mean, I was, because I'm a research fanatic, I always like being very well prepared before I go into any kind of project or journey. So I did a lot of videos. But basically, whenever I first started the plant-based lifestyle, I actually started with a 10-day water fast, which kind of reset my taste bud, reset my digestive system. And then right off the bat, I was eating stuff like fruit. But I was eating a lot of processed stuff, too, mainly like veggie burgers with wheat buns and a lot of pasta with fat-free sauce. I was doing a lot of smoothies, too, because before I even went plant-based, I started incorporating more smoothies in my diet, you know, fruits and greens and stuff like that. But yeah, mainly it was a lot of processed stuff, and I ate a lot of potatoes in the beginning, too, a lot of rice. A lot of white processed rice was, like, my go-to thing for the longest time whenever I first started eating that way.
And that was over, and the weight was falling off, right?
Yeah, it was coming off pretty good. I mean, I actually didn't weigh myself, because I started my weight loss journey at the beginning of 2015, and I went plant-based in June of that year, and I didn't weigh myself till I think October or November of that year. That was the first time I weighed myself, and I lost 135 pounds the very first time I weighed in, and I didn't care about weight. I didn't care about numbers. I just kind of tried to do everything opposite of what I always did in the past, because obviously it didn't work for me the way I wanted it to. So I wasn't worried about numbers at first, but yeah, it just started coming off. And luckily the first time I weighed, it was a really good loss.
When you did that 10-day water fast, I mean, you know, you had to have a lot of toxins in your system. I mean, did you have I've only done a 3-day water fast, and you get a little achy on the third day. I mean, did you experience detox problems? What did you experience during that?
Yeah, well, I'm an avid water faster. I've done a lot of, you know, studying on it, and for years, I think right after college, I started water fasting, and I do multiple, you know, 5 days, 7 days, 10 days. I've done multiple 14-day water fasts. But yeah, I think it's always. An icky feeling whenever you water fast, especially after, like you said, on day three, it just gets kind of harder and harder. But yeah, I detox every time I fast. And even if I were to fast right now, I'd probably still detox from just the environmental toxins, I think. But it would be nowhere near as harsh as it was 2 years ago when I was eating, you know, the standard American diet stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's incredible, you know. Again, you know, nobody would say, oh, you know, you'll be able to water fast 10 days because, you know, you're eating that high a calorie load on a daily basis, and then to be able to just shut it off, you know, I mean, obviously there's, you know, there's more to it than, you know, calories in, calories out type of deal.
Right, yeah.
So after that, so October, you had about 135 pounds lost. So I guess you kept reading and you kept honing in your nutrition?
Yeah. It just kept getting cleaner and cleaner and cleaner. My diet and, well, my activity level wasn't anything in the beginning. I didn't do anything physical because, honestly, I couldn't even do anything physically because I was so large. But, at first I was eating a lot of processed stuff, and I was even trying to maybe add a drop or two of oil to a certain couple of things because I'm like, well, you know, it's going to stick to the pan. I got to use something. But I was more of an excuse to have a little bit of those flavors, you know, with my veggies, because I wasn't really quite used to the no-fat thing. So at the very beginning, I used a little bit of oil. But just systematically, I got rid of the oils, the fats, the processed food. And then recently, I started getting even cleaner, you know, cutting out all processed food, cutting out even salt, even added salt, trying to get most of my sodium from natural plants. And now I'm trying to cut out chemicals, like just all needless chemicals and BPAs and plastics. And I just try to get cleaner and cleaner and cleaner. And I'm trying not to get too clean, because I know people can actually have, you know, orthorexia and and make it a really big problem. But I'm trying to be pretty aware of that, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's super. And so what do you think you started at weight-wise?
I knew for a fact it was over 500 pounds because many, many, many months before I started, I weighed 491. And I went on this little local weight loss competition sort of thing, and I didn't even last a couple of weeks. I didn't really do anything with it, and I fell off the wagon bad, and I was just, I mean, going all out and eating fast food constantly, and I was just, it got pretty rough, and I was eating whole large pizzas and ate sandwiches from burger places, and it was pretty rough during that time of my life. So I know for a fact I was way, way heavier. I mean, I had to be at least, you know, over 500, but it could have been 510, 520 easily.
And that kind of brings me back to the fast. You know, I've always been someone that I have had a big appetite, you know, and after I did my water fast, you know, sometimes people say, oh, your stomach will shrink and you won't have an appetite. Well, I got to tell you, you know, after this, you know, I was, you know, I laughed because I was super aware of where food was in my house, you know, even more so than usual. And I had been on an airplane and you know, there was a bag of Delta peanuts laying like on the counter. And like, I walk into the room and I didn't even like those, you know, but I look, you know, I mean, they catch my eye, like almost, you know, radar. And I knew exactly what I was going to eat when I broke the fast. And I did. And finally I just like, you know, I mean, I broke it with zucchini and carrots and, you know, and an orange. I mean, it wasn't like I, you know, went to make, you know, had something great or anything, or, you know, high calorie.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like I was full either. I decided I broke it in the evening and I decided, well, I'm just going to go to bed. You know, enough's enough. You know, I don't want to get sick. But I can't say right. that I was full. So somebody like you that is, you know, struggled and been able to eat such large quantities after 10 days, I mean, you must, you know, were you ready to, you know, how'd you control things, you know?
Yeah, well, I think for me, and luckily, and I know not many people could say that they're used to fasting, but I did so many fasts before, I got really good at controlling the hunger and the urges after the fast ended, because I was always, I mean, when I first started fasting years ago, it was not as easy. You know, I would struggle pretty hard, and sometimes I would end a fast horribly. I would go straight from a 5-day water fast to going to eat fast food in large quantities, and I would make myself sick. And I think learning from those mistakes kind of helped me through the years, and mainly this more recent 10-day fast that helped me. But yeah, luckily, whenever I came off this last 10-day water fast, I started eating just clean fruits and vegetables, you know, a little bit of processed stuff, but it really helped me get in tune with just whole plants too. I mean, my taste buds weren't so used to the high stimulating foods.
Do you find so, and so that was 2015, so where are you right now?
As far as weight?
Yes.
The other day I weighed and it was 234.
Wow.
So about 265, 270 pounds lost so far, and I'm still going, you know, I'm still, you know, training for running, and I'm trying to eat cleaner and cleaner. I just continuing to do what I'm doing.
And so this running thing, you know, what prompted you to put some running shoes on?
Well, whenever I got down to a certain period in my weight, I started feeling way better. I started having more energy, and I knew I needed to do something. I couldn't just lose all of the weight with just diet. I just knew that I needed to do something. I felt like doing something because I was always so sedentary my whole life. So at first, I actually started just, you know, walking and hiking. And I was into mushroom hunting. So me and a friend would go out mushroom hunting, and we'd go out in the woods and just do that for a long time. And that was great exercise. And then I got into more of the exercise bike because I had an exercise bike my mom gave me. So I started using that more. I found a guy named Jared Monasmith who also lost 260-ish pounds on a plant-based lifestyle. And he was a guy who rode a bike. He was a big into biking. So I started kind of getting interested in that. But then I saw Josh Lajani's story, you know, showing how he, you know, went from being very large and he started running these really awesome distances. And I started following him and he started doing like 50-mile races and 100-mile races. And I just saw all these different guys doing these things physically. I'm like, I have to do that. Like, I want to do that. I want to be the person who is able to do those amazing things. And for me, I didn't have an expensive bike, and I figured that running would be an easy, cheap way to burn up some calories. And actually, I found out that, you know, I'm probably spending more on running shoes and socks and books and stuff about running. But I really came to love it. Like, I really, really enjoy running now, which in a million years, I never would have thought I would be saying that. But I think it's almost meditative and therapeutic. I mean, I really, really like it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you go outside to run mostly?
Yeah, well, at first I did a lot of treadmill stuff, and I'm still doing stuff on the treadmill. But I recently got a really great watch, a Garmin, which I've never had one, but my girlfriend got one for me, and it's so amazing. So I'm trying to run outside as much as I can now. But I'm running Leadville, the Leadville Heavy Half Marathon in June with these guys,
Josh
Lajani, Tim Kaufman. All these guys are doing this run. But so from now until then, I plan on being outside as much as possible, running up trails and up hills and stuff like that.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, it is amazing how, you know, you feel better. And, you know, again, as you'll know, you know, Josh always talks about everybody. And, of course, they're born to run. I'm sure you've read that book. You know, we were made to move.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you had the weights taken off of you, you were able to move.
Right. And actually, I told Josh this in the past. You know, we've said it to each other, but we've been training for this our whole life. We've been training with a weighted vest our whole life. So us bigger guys actually have an advantage over a lot of people because we're so used to all the weight on our bodies and our legs that running, I think for us, is a little bit easier because we're used to being heavy. So now we're so light. I think it's really beneficial to us.
Yeah. I mean, you've been doing Olympic lifting all your life just to move from place to place.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, 270 pounds less. I mean, I can move my feet way better.
You haven't really talked me into getting a 200-pound leaded vest yet, but I think you're absolutely right. You know, I think your endurance. I mean, you know, the fact that you've survived what you've survived. This is a cakewalk for you at 230. You know, it's
You may
just start flying.
Yeah, I know. And it's actually funny because at first I wasn't ever really worried about the physical weight. Now I'm actually more interested in losing the weight only because it's going to make me run better and make me lighter on my feet. So it's more of a performance thing.
Yeah, no, you can do what the rest of America does and just take 2 ounces off your running shoes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, I don't want to run in those eight-ounce shoes. They're way too heavy from the, you know, the five or the six, you know. But yeah, the baked potato weighed more than that, but that's okay, you know. I have a friend that she, you know, she carries all this fluid on her, you know, one of the fluid belts. And her fluid belt weighs 10 pounds, and her husband always teases her. If you take that belt off, you know, you really fly.
Yeah, that's right.
That's great. So this is all, I mean, you know, it's a great community, you know, Josh and Tim. I mean, it's a great, and a lot of the plant-based, you know, community, and certainly the, you know, whole food plant-based, it's a great supportive community, an active community. But there've got to be some struggles, you know, your friends, family, how does that go?
Well, at first, you know, not many people around here were into that sort of thing, like nobody really. And when I found it and I started, you know, changing my life because of it, I tried to share as much as possible. And that's not the easiest thing to do, considering everyone around here is really into their barbecue and country cooking. And so not really many people wanted to hear what I had to say, but a few people are now seeing what it's done for me, and some people are asking me about it, which is wonderful. My mom, she had a stroke a few years ago, and that's one of the reasons I really started to be more conscious about my health. And I got her eating this way, and she's getting off medication. She's lost 50 pounds. She's continuing to do good. And we're trying to get other family members to do it too, because there's so many of us around here that need something like that, because everyone out here has medications and, you know, hypertension, blood pressure issues. And so, you know, we're just continuing to try to just lead by example and try to get the word out there. But it's just hard because people really don't like being preached at, you know, But that's a learning thing. I've been learning about that for the past 2 years, too, is how to, you know, spread this awesome stuff without being, you know, the pushy person that's, you know, pushing people away from it versus, you know, bringing them towards it.
Yeah. Well, you have, you know, you certainly have the, you know, your motivation just when people, you know, see the before and after, you know, that if you can do it, then, you know, this is okay. And the fact that you're a young man, you know, as opposed to, you know, somebody that's older and had a bunch of, you know, problems, or, you know, you're a role model for so many younger people. You know, I was listening to another podcast, and a psychologist was actually talking about, you know, if you're around people that, you know, do a behavior, and I've experienced it, you know, if you kind of go down to the least favorable aspect, you know. So if you're around a bunch of people, it's like, oh, let's go for steaks, and, you know, or let's go for ice cream, and then, you know, it's pretty hard to be the guy that says, oh, I don't want to do that. But if you have, but it's also been shown that if you're steadfast in your values, you know, you say, this is how I want to be. I want to eat, like you say, you're not eating for the weight, you're eating for the health, and I want to eat clean. And this, these are my goals, is to weed out all these, you know, these, the byproducts and the process. So you have a set of values that makes you so much more strong than somebody just trying to hold on to a weight loss goal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good thing about, you know, being around everyone and everyone wants to do the fun things. And I may be the one that says, well, I'm not really going to do that. And so it's not as interesting or pleasurable or fun to go that route for other people, especially, you know, from an outside perspective, looking in on it, like, well, why would I want to do that? But I always kind of think of it like, and I don't know, I have a weird mentality, but I really look at certain foods and stuff like that, like drugs, like almost as bad as heroin. If people start eating, you know, fast food and sodas and stuff like that, I really look at it like almost a heroin. And if you were in a house full of, you know, drug users, you know, how you could be in a whole house full of people using drugs, and you're trying to be the one that says, hey, how about we not do heroin anymore because it's killing us? Everyone in the house is going to think you're trying to ruin their life, but actually it's the opposite. But to them, you're ruining their happiness, their pleasure source. But yeah, I think that's an interesting thing that the psychologist had to say.
Yeah, I did too. And, you know, the other thing, you know, we'll, you know, take it a step further. So now, you know, you got the Super Bowl and that come up. And that's what I struggle with my patients a whole lot, you know, when their family comes in or kids or they're at a party. And, of course, Super Bowl Sunday is probably, you know, right up there with Christmas and Thanksgiving. And so what's going to happen for you?
Well, I was never really super into the Super Bowl thing. You know, I loved, you know, being with friends and family and eating the chips and the sodas and the cheese balls and the chicken wings and all that. But honestly, these days I have so much of a different mindset. And honestly, if I wanted to go to a Super Bowl party and pig out, I could. But I wouldn't pig out on the stuff that's going to damage my body. I would pig out on, you know, fat-free tortillas with some good healthy salsa, or I would eat, you know, fruits and veggies. I mean, I think to me, I've adapted my taste buds and my mind to really crave healthy foods, and I think that's the same with everyone. I think it's just inevitable, and biologically, we're meant to be, you know, craving those things. So for me, I don't think the Super Bowl or anything like that is an issue anymore because I'm not adapted to be craving those bad things anymore. So I think anyone who wants to be healthy can do exactly what they do, but they don't have to do it in a damaging way.
What do you think about the concept of your gut microbe being a lot responsible for, you know, driving your taste buds, maybe your lack of being satisfied. You know, I mean, because there is, you know, it's like kind of the chicken and the egg type of, it's a bad thing to say, but, you know, which came first? Did you have like really bad gut microbes, perhaps compared to your siblings and other people around you that kind of led you to get into, and this bad stuff was really available, so it kind of fed, you know, a preponderance of this bad bacteria. And then, you know, as time went on and bad things happened, you just had this overwhelming amount of bad, you know, you just really were craving the bad things as opposed to the good things. And it wasn't until you had this extended period of time where the fiber and the plants and everything kind of got through you that were you able to kind of hang on to it. Do you see anything like that? Does that make any sense to you or not really?
Yeah, kind of. You know, I think it takes a while to adapt the body, including, you know, bacteria in the gut. But yeah, I actually never really thought about the bacteria having an effect on cravings, but that totally makes sense to me. But I just think for me, I knew just because watching all these videos and hearing all these doctors talk about how your mind can adapt to the taste and I found that to be very true because I tried to experiment with that. Because I used to hate watermelon a lot, actually. Like, I would never eat watermelon. But I remember knowing that I can adapt my taste buds and my mind and possibly even my gut bacteria to crave these healthy foods versus the not so healthy foods. So I kept on buying watermelon after watermelon and eating it and eating it. And then after so many times, I started really loving it. And watermelon is one of my favorite foods now. So, but I don't think I have any like problem with cravings or anything anymore. I think I'm just so adapted to the healthy way of eating. But I'm actually really interested in looking more about the bacteria stuff now. I've always been interested in that stuff. I just really got into it.
And you know, to get even more personal, you weren't a C-section baby by any chance?
I don't think I was. I'm not really sure. But,
okay.
I was a little bit too young to remember.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you didn't, actually. Probably be traumatic either way. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's evidence that, you know, we get a lot of the bacteria from our mother, one way or another. And, you know, and then again, you know, as you feed this, because I always look at, you know, people that have just experienced only junk food their whole life. You know, I have some relatives that just really grew up on hot dogs and hamburgers and cheap cereal and that kind of stuff. And just really, you know, it just keeps feeding back as a vicious cycle. And, you know, but on the other hand, you know, once you've done that, I mean, they have no desire to change, because the thought of, you know, changing the way you eat is just more than they can, you know, even fathom at this point. So it's very interesting. I mean, I'm sure we'll learn more as time goes on and we learn more about, you know, the gut microbe and things, but, you know, it is really interesting. And do you do any fasting now at all, or just trying to eat really clean?
I always plan on being a maintenance type faster, you know, for I think environmental stuff, and I love the challenge of it. It's one of the big reasons I got into it. I like the mental challenge. I think it strengthens the mind. I don't know. I think there's so many benefits to fasting. You know, I've heard of amazing, you know, diseases being completely reversed by fasting. So all of that just keeps me intrigued and always wanting to kind of use it as a maintenance tool. So yeah, I think I'm always going to be fasting on and off throughout my life.
I'm going to make a predictor. You're going to be an ultra marathoner before long.
I hope to. I definitely, it's on my list of things to achieve, and I really do want to do that.
I see it coming. You know, you heard it here first, but I see it coming. Good for you. Yeah, I mean, I share the same, you know, the mental challenge part. You know, I see that, and you know, experimenting, and you know, there's so much when you start to run the longer distances. You know, trying to get your nutrition, trying to get your pace, dealing with the discomforts of, you know, running longer and longer. You know, it becomes such an interesting challenge to me. You know, I always laugh, what stupid thing will I do next? But, you know, I find that so intriguing. And I also find it, you know, as a kind of a metaphor for life a little bit, that, you know, when you're doing these challenges, and if you can tough it out through some of these things, it kind of helps you tough out through other things in your life that, you know, maybe you'll handle them a little better. I don't know. You know, it just, to me, it seems like I need to challenge my stamina every once in a while.
Yeah, I totally agree. I always tell people, and always kind of, I'm a really big analogy person, but, when you said running is, you know, kind of just like life, and it's the absolute truth. And I've realized that, you know, when I started running, I always use the analogy of like waiting in line, like at the DMV. You know, no one wants to be at the DMV. They're always surrounded by people, you know, yapping or talking negative or kids playing, and they just have to wait there an hour while they, you know, have to just wait till their turn. But that's the same way with running. If you just can wait it out and realize that you can deal with all these little things that are bothering you, and if you put that into this perspective of life, it's the exact same thing. You're just waiting in line. Either you can be happy or you can be really upset about it. But either way, we're all in this line, and you really can't get out of that line, because it's like inevitable. You know you have to wait it out, because you have to either, you know, metaphorically get your license or whatever. But it really does portray life in the best way possible. Running is so relatable to life. Yeah.
Great. Well, it sounds like you've got it going on. You're on Facebook. What are you doing? You're doing some speaking as well?
Not really a whole lot. I mean, I'm doing some podcast interviews. I did an interview with Jason Cohen for Big Change the Film. I hope to do more in the future. I really need to kind of get out there more. I'm not really too out there on social media. I kind of feel like I need to be because I do have a story to tell, and a lot of people can relate to my specific story. But no, I definitely hope to be more outspoken about this, definitely in the near future.
Well, good. Well, I'm going to, I'll be looking forward to seeing how you do Leadville, and more importantly, looking more forward to see what you sign up for next.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually interested in what I'm going to do next too, but, I just know for a fact that it's not stopping because, for me, it's too fun and too interesting to stop. So yeah, I'm definitely excited about it all.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time to speak with me this afternoon, and, you know, you're another lighthouse out there for people, and I think it's so important because I think when people get to a certain point, either they lose all hope and they give up, or they, you know, turn to some sort of surgical corrections that are temporary fixes but don't really fix the problem because they're not getting adequate nutrition. And, yeah. You know, and they're not given any support by the medical community that, hey, you can actually do this if you just have the proper nutrition.
Exactly. And, you know, earlier you said something about community. For me, I think finding that community and finding guys like Jared Monasmith, Josh Lajani, Tim Kaufman, Jason Cohen, Bobby Brennan, you know, Marcus Cook, all these guys have lost so much weight. And finding these other people doing the exact same thing, waiting in line just like I am, it really helps because you can help each other. And I don't know, that community is a really big thing too. But finding the nutrition, I think that's absolute key. Learning about health and why we shouldn't be eating certain things and why, you know, reaching a nutrition level versus pleasure level is so much more optimal for the human body. Yeah.
Well, I thank you again for taking time to speak with me, and certainly good luck to you, and I hope to speak with you again in the future. Maybe see you at a race.
Absolutely.
Maybe I'll have to crew for you for your 100 or something.
Yeah, that would be so awesome. I really, really appreciate
you. I might hold you back, but anyway. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. You're welcome.
Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Justin. He's going to be a great ultra runner. I can tell already. And what an inspiration. A humble guy. He did it all on his own. He's doing it the healthy way. So, you know, I think more and more stories from people like him are important. Again, he tackled this from a nutrition aspect, not from a vanity weight loss aspect. And it's, you know, that when you look about the alternatives with diet pills or these fad diets, they just don't work. And the other thing that really, really bothers me is, you know, when people do these mechanical surgeries, you know, I know that they feel like they're at, you know, their last choice and their last, you know, that's, they have nothing left. But it's dangerous, and it doesn't fix the problem. And it causes a whole bunch of other problems as far as, you know, nutrient absorption and metabolism. So, you know, I think the more people that we hear like Justin that, you know, is really conquering this through a nutrient-dense pathway, the better it is for everybody. If you have any questions for me, please call me or email me at jamiedulaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedulaney@gmail.com. Please check out the website at drdulaney.com. I'm trying to post more recipes. I'm on Instagram at Jamila Delaney. I post almost every day something that I eat or something that I find exciting. You may see a few cat and dog pictures, but hey, you know, you have to put up with that. I appreciate you listening. If you'd like to consult with me through a telemedicine consultation, if you're out of the area, great. I'd be happy to speak with you. You can always email me to set that up. I'm also, you know, doing the nutrition classes locally. So if you're in the area, that would be great. And we want to continue having these conferences on the weekend so people from all over can come in. It was a great success a couple weeks ago. Had a great time, Tim Marie Hagenberger and Dr. Clapper. So we'll keep doing these. Tim Marie and I would like to do some retreats. So if you have some interest in that, you know, keep in touch with me because we're going to start planning these. So thank you very much for listening. Eat your plants, eat nutrient dense, get out and move your body.